The purpose of human life is to serve, to show compassion, and the will to help others. That's a quote by Albert Schweitzer. Hey, hey! Welcome to Zoe's Corner, where we keep it real and raw with a little bit of fun. I'm Zoe, aka Mrs. Chibs, and this is my cozy corner of the world where I document my life's crazy and amazing journey. The highs, the lows, and all the messy, beautiful moments in between. We're talking faith, finances, love, life lessons, you name it. And through it all, I'm on a mission. ICE. Inspire, create, and encourage. And that's what I hope each episode does for you. So whether you're sipping coffee, stuck in traffic, or just chilling at home, buckle up, get comfy, and let's have some real talk. No filters, no fluff, just life as it is. Ready? Let's dive in. Growing up, I remember from, I don't know how young, but I think maybe like four, you know, everyone's asking, you, like whenever you go visit someone, they always ask you like, oh, do you go to school? You say yes. And then the follow-up question is, what do you want to be when you grow up? So like between the ages of 5 and 10, anything I would say, people would be okay with. But then when I reached age 11 and above, every time someone would ask me that question, I would, whatever I would respond with, the responses were always like, okay, so like if I said a princess, right? It's like, no, that's not a real job. Or if you say, oh, I want to be a this, that doesn't really make money. Or if you say you want to study philosophy, they're like, okay, you want to study philosophy and then what? Like, what job will philosophy get you? And so I remember just thinking about how a lot of these things were like money-centered. So if it's not money-centered, then it's like society-centered. So like in the part of the world where I am, jobs like an accountant, a lawyer, a doctor are seen to be jobs that make a lot of money. And then jobs like teaching or nursing, they may not make a lot of money, but they are, they matter in society, so to say. So those were normally like the kind of jobs that they would ask. Like those are the kind of answers that like adults would want me to answer. And so, yeah, on how I found my way into the line of work in which I work in is from the time I was 5, I had a fascination for 3 things. So number one is I loved numbers. So I think people would say I was a smart child growing up, but I think I just had a head start because my sister was like 2 years older than me. And so whatever she would teach me, I'm saying was, like she's no longer 2 years older than me. My sister is 2 years older than me, my immediate older sister. And whatever she would learn at school, she would teach me. So it's not necessarily that I was smart, but it was just that I got a head start in school. And so a lot of the things that I was learning was revision because my sister, 2 grades above, had been teaching me these things. So I had a fascination for numbers. I had a fascination for family. And I had a fascination of speaking on behalf of others. So I know like my squad growing up, we were like staircase friends. So like, let's say I was 7 and then there was a 6-year-old, there was a 5-year-old, there was a 4-year-old. So we would all play together like 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, kind of age group kind of thing. So I remember, I think me being the oldest in the group, I would always, you know, speak on behalf of the squad. And so it's just something that I liked doing. So, you know, you go for an event or you're at church and then they ask, oh, what drinks do you want? You know, I would go to like the squad and I'll be like, oh, what drinks would you guys like? And then they would tell me what drinks they would like and I would go and speak on behalf of them over that. Or if someone says, oh, they're fighting with someone, I would be like, oh, would you like me to speak to them on your behalf? And they would be like, yeah, I feel shy. And so it's, you know, I was like a mediator, and I just realized that I really enjoyed doing that. So I remember thinking like, okay, in life, I want to do these three things. Like, if I do these three things, then I have made it in life. And from that time, I know it sounds crazy. Like, why is a five-year-old making such big decisions? But I did make the decision that I was going to try my best to make decisions that align with those three things. So when it comes to numbers, right? Background story. My dad played in the Zambian national rugby team before I was born. But he influenced his younger brother to join the rugby team, and he was so good, and he played for Zambia's national team. So I remember my uncle had a match. A rugby match. It was a Zambia versus Botswana rugby match. And my uncle, who was in Zambia, came to Botswana to play the rugby match against Botswana. We lived in Botswana at the time. And so I remember we went to watch the rugby match. I don't remember much of the rugby match, but when we took pictures with my uncle, his uniform had, you know, the Zambian colors, and it had a sponsor at the top. I think it's like top left corner. There was a logo. And so I remember being curious, and I asked him, I think I was around 7 or 8 at this point. And I asked my dad and my uncle, I was like, oh, you know, what does this mean? And that was the logo for Deloitte. And so Deloitte, my uncle, you know, Deloitte is the one of the big four audit firms of the world. And so my uncle tells me that, oh, you like numbers, right? I was like, yeah, I do like numbers. He's like, okay, this company, they just deal with numbers. So if you still like numbers when you're older, you should want to work for them. I was like, okay, interesting. And he told me how they are all over the world. So anywhere I want to work in the world, I can work with them. And so I remember thinking like, okay, make sure you study something where you can work at Deloitte. Because if you work at Deloitte, then that means that you are playing with numbers. And so that is like tick off the list. And so throughout high school, I remember once asking, I think there was a section where we had to, in junior high, we were asked, I mean, in senior high, you had to choose what subjects you're going to specialize in. And I remember all the teachers really wanted me to specialize in like science, because they're like, oh, you know, girls in STEM and women in STEM. And I remember asking, one of the teachers in high school, like, if I study biology or chemistry or physics, will I be able to work at Deloitte? And they were like, no, Deloitte is for auditors. I was like, auditors? What is an auditor? I know, like, I was in high school, but I really didn't know what an auditor was. I knew jobs of an accountant, but I didn't know what an auditor was. And so they were like, anyway, you can study accounts. So I ended up still doing the pure sciences, but I chose accounts instead of like geography or history or literature. I chose accounts and commerce and all those like businessy topics, subjects anyway. And so that was high school. I did accounts. I did really well. And when it was time to go to college, I remember asking myself like, okay, what do I need to study to be an auditor? You know, and so I remember asking my mom's cousin, my uncle, and he said, oh, you should study a program called CIMA. I was like, oh, CIMA. Okay, what's CIMA? And he's like, you'll find out when you go to school. So I told my parents like, oh, hey, I want to be an accountant and I want to study CIMA because I'll be able to work at Deloitte. And so my mom was like, oh, okay, cool. So she enrolled me in the university and I signed up and I was registered as a CIMA student. And so when I was just about to start classes, something in me just told me like, ask, again, what you need to study to be an auditor. So I asked I think one of the people that were like enrolling me in, yeah, I don't know what their names are, but I basically told them like, hey, I would like to work at Deloitte as an auditor when I'm done. Will CIMA allow me to work at Deloitte as an auditor? And they were like, oh, you want to be an auditor? Actually, you should do ACCA. Don't do CIMA. I was like, oh, okay. They're like, yeah, CIMA is for management accountants, but ACCA is mainly what auditors study. I was like, oh, okay, cool. And so that's how they switched me to ACCA. But my number for like my student ID was still a CIMA number, since that's what I registered as. And so that's how I got into finance. So that was like one part, right? Playing with numbers. And then part number two is understanding and wanting to be part of a family. So yeah, I remember, again, being really young and understanding a mother, a father, children. And I was like, wow, this is something that I want. My parents are extremely touchy and lovey-dovey. They constantly held hands. They would hug. They would kiss. And I remember wanting to kiss so bad. And I remember telling my dad, like, oh, like, I want to kiss somebody. And my dad was like, okay. And he was like, yeah, when you're older, you can kiss whoever, you can kiss as many times as you want. However, you need to kiss your husband. You're only allowed to kiss your husband. And so I was thinking, like, okay, the way in which I will be able to kiss is to have a husband. And having a husband means I'll get to have my own family. And so that was always like something that was running in my head. So I never believed in like male or female friendships, because I was always thinking like boys in my life should either be my father, my brother, or my son, or my nephew or cousin, you know, one of those. So the fact that I don't have any brothers and my dad is already there, the only other option for a guy to be in my life is to be my husband. So whenever guys would be like, oh, let's be friends, in my head I'm like, yeah, no, you're not gonna marry me or give me babies, so I think you can remain an acquaintance. And so it's not to say that I never like had friends who were guys, but I just never classified them as friends. I don't know if that makes sense. And I just always had it at the back of my mind, like, don't be too close to this person. Don't like confide in this person. The person you should be confiding in, if it's not your girlfriend, it should be your husband. And so, yeah, I remember even in high school, when I dated, I was always like, hey, like, we're gonna get married, right? And of course, I didn't marry my high school people. But that was always like at the back of my mind, that I'm not just playing. This is not just for fun. Like, this is like, I want to have a family with this person. And when I saw that our goals are not aligned, it was like, okay, I don't think we'll be able to, make a family, like create this family that I want. And so bye. And I would cut them off. And like, you know, even people who are friends with their exes, I never understand, because we may not have like ended on bad terms or anything. We can be civil. Like, I see their WhatsApp stories and stuff, but I'm not going to reach out and be like, hi, how are you doing? Let's catch up. Why? Why? Again, if you are not in my life to marry me as a guy, then why are you in my life? And so I remember, After college, I met my husband in the same year I stopped going to school. I met my husband in the same year, and I remember on our very first date, at the time I wasn't actually ready for a relationship or anything. And I think I've actually spoken about this story with my husband in one of the episodes that I've already published. But anyway, On the first date, one of the things he spoke about was just his intention for family and, you know, being married young. And I was like, oh my gosh. You know, like, it's not something that I had put on Facebook, like, I want to get married young. I had posted, of course, that I do want to get married and I'm excited about marriage, but I didn't post, like, that I wanted to get married young and everything. And so, yeah, so my husband, you know, like, we aligned in many other ways, not just in getting married. And so we got married. And so that was like, okay, check, you know, numbers, check, marriage, check. And now comes the part for speaking on behalf of others. So on this side of, on this aspect of the conversation, I remember growing up in a game reserve. So the village I was born in has a rhino sanctuary, like, an hour from our house. And then we moved to, so, like, we would see rhinos all the time. Like, we would go there, chill, braai, all those stuff, have a barbecue and everything. If it's someone's birthday, we go to the rhino sanctuary. It's, like, really close by. And you get to interact with rhinos. And rhinos are, like, everywhere. And so we moved from the village I was staying in to a town. And that town was in, it was a part of a game reserve. So this means that you have impalas in your yard. This means you have warthogs chasing you after school because you tried to touch one of their babies. This means that occasionally the leopard would find itself chilling on the golf course and you would make sure to stay away from the golf course. You know, like, it was a, it was just like living, like, one, living one with nature. You would have a monitor lizard, like, behind your deep freezer. You know, you would have, like, it was a proper game reserve, but also a proper town. And so my love for animals and wildlife was just, like, in me because it's something that I was surrounded by. Something my parents were also, like, a part of, which really heavily influenced this, speaking on behalf of others. They volunteered a lot. Like, they were part of a club called the Lions Club, and basically, it's like a charitable organization. You volunteer and you just do stuff for your community. And so because my parents were heavily involved in that, I was heavily involved in that by default, because it's like, hey, we're going for this event and you tag along. Hey, we're going to give out food to the homeless. You tag along and you do whatever they're doing. Oh, hey, we're going to schools. We're going to do this and we're going to do that. And so I remember this one time, my dad took me and my friend came over for a sleepover, and we drove to a town about 3-4 hours away from where we stayed. And they were volunteering for a deaf school. And that was, I think, my first exposure to the deaf culture. And I remember, like, being so fascinated by deaf culture and just, like, wondering, like, wow, okay, these people can't hear what we're saying, but they can communicate. And just feeling like, I would like to be a part of this in some way. Like, okay, is there a way that I can speak on behalf of them? Again, going back to that third thing, speaking on behalf of others. So many years passed, I think maybe like 8 years or something passed. And I remember applying for the Duke of Edinburgh Award thing. And part of the Duke of Edinburgh Award is that you need to learn a skill. So initially I wanted to learn the guitar, but then there was no one to teach me guitar. But I was around a deaf girl who was my friend. And I only knew the alphabet in Botswana Sign Language. I didn't really know much. And so I was like, oh, hey, let me speak to her mom so that her mom can teach me. And that's how her mom took me under her wing and was like, okay, yeah, you'll be sitting next to me. Because in the church, there was a segment of the church where they were interpreting sign into sign, like the sermon into sign language. And so I would sit there on Sundays and I would pick up signs and, you know, slowly get there. This one time, her mom was like, you know what? I think for you to fully learn and be immersed in the culture, I would like you to actually live with her. And so I started living with my friend who is deaf. And y'all, when I tell you that was a very interesting, like, 6 months of my life, it was very interesting, y'all. Because to this day, I tell you, I watch videos without sound because we would watch TV without sound. And just trying to, and what was interesting, she really loved the Chinese movies, the ones that are all like karate based, because they exaggerate their facial expressions so much, you don't need sound to know what they're saying or what they're feeling. And so I got immersed into that culture and I picked up sign language and I felt like, oh yeah, you know, like this is a way of me spreading Jesus and spreading Jesus to people in the deaf community. Or even sometimes I would go with my friend to the malls and stuff, and she would ask for certain things, and of course people wouldn't understand, and so I would be able to interpret for her or like ask her what she would want and all that stuff. And I felt very fulfilled, like, okay, like I'm speaking on behalf of others, like check, you know. So I was thinking, like, okay, how else? Because, oh, anyway, I moved to Zambia and when I moved to Zambia, I lost my community. So I had to start afresh. I had to make new friends. I had to learn new languages. It was very difficult. But I remember just feeling like, again, whatever I need to do, I need to do something on behalf of others. And that's when I got more involved in the conservation space, because I was like, okay, trees can't speak for themselves. Animals can't speak for themselves. Maybe I can speak for them. And so I started like this advocacy thing, you know, volunteering certain places, doing litter cleanups and all that stuff. But I felt like it wasn't enough. And so that's when I joined the Miss Earth pageant and went, you know, I managed to get selected my first time ever. I got selected and I was able to represent Zambia in the Miss Earth pageant in 2018. And I was like, wow, okay, if I remain in this conservation space, I will be able to speak on behalf of the trees and speak on behalf of animals. Shout out to The Lorax, because that's like one of my favorite movies. So now how I've tied all of this together, right? How God has managed to allow me to tie all of this together. I was working for, remember how I wanted to play with numbers and I wanted to work for Deloitte, right? Y'all, I applied at Deloitte, I don't know how many times, and it was just like rejection after rejection after rejection. I applied to the ones in Europe, I applied to the ones in Asia, I applied to one in the U.S., I applied to the Zambia one. I think I applied to like Kenya and like Uganda. I was like looking for, you know, I'm like, y'all, my dream, like, okay, fine. I've studied accounting. I've studied ACCA. I need to work for Deloitte. I need to check this off my list. I made my whole decision based on Deloitte. Like, you cannot reject me. But y'all, I was rejected. I was rejected many times, and I remember feeling so sad. I was just like, what the heck? But in 2019, y'all, in 2019, I got selected to work for PwC. So that's Pricewaterhouse. And the whole, like, whenever I was growing up, I would always look up, like, okay, Deloitte is number what in the world? And it was always number one, always number one, always number one. But in 2019... when I got picked by PwC, y'all, Deloitte was number two that year on my Google search. When I listed like the top four firms, who was number one? Number one was PwC. And I remember feeling like, wow, like, okay, Deloitte, like, okay, God, you didn't want me to go to Deloitte because that was number two. You wanted me to go to PwC because that's number one. Like, I'm a number one child, you know? I'm like creme de la creme. I'm top of the top. And when we went to PwC, it's something that they kept telling us through and through, like, you guys are the top of the food chain, you're the creme de la creme, yeah, you know, you are the nation's best, basically. And I remember feeling so honored and so privileged. But as I continued to work as an auditor, again, remember, this is the dream. Work for Deloitte, but okay, fine. Work for PwC. You want to be an auditor. You want to play with numbers. Y'all, I did not want to be an auditor. And I think I should have already like realized that when I failed audit 3 times with my ACC exams. Like, I don't know why that was not a sign that I do not like audit, or audit just doesn't like me. All the other subjects I was passing like on the first try, or maybe even the second, but audit, oh my gosh, y'all, ACC took my money with that subject. And so I just did not feel fulfilled at all being an auditor. And I remember just thinking to myself, like, Zoe, come on, this is like 1/3 of your dream, you know, this is what you're, you know, this is what you do, you know, this is what you're doing. You're living your dream. But my dream just seemed so unfulfilled. And so that was like 2019, right? And in 2019, I was also engaged. So I was like, okay, 2 out of 3. This guy says he's gonna marry me. So it's kind of like a check in the box about having my own family. And then number 2, to play with numbers, I'm working for PwC, number 1 in the world, you know, but still not feeling that oomph, you know. And so the year 2020, y'all, even though it was like a horrible year with COVID, I feel like that was my year, because I got married in 2020. So I got my own family, check. While I was working for PwC, I was like, I think I want something more fulfilling, more purpose-driven. I want something that merges and aligns with everything. And so I resigned after working there a couple of months. And I received a phone call on the same day from a conservation organization asking me to send through their CV and asking me for an interview. Mind you, I had applied for this job in 2018, 2 years ago, and at that time I wasn't good enough. And so this time they were like, hey, we hope that in the last 2 years you've been able to work and you've picked up some skills and you've done ABCD. I'm like, yes, I have. I've worked at PwC. I am the creme de la creme, you know. And so, yeah, like everything just aligned, y'all. In 2020, that was my year where I got married. I got my family, y'all, in 2020. That was a check. I was able to play with numbers in a way in which I felt purposeful. That was a check number 2. And number 3, I was working for a conservation organization, which meant that even though I am playing with numbers, my numbers are making a difference and my numbers are speaking on behalf of animals. And y'all, I just felt fulfilled, and I was just like, wow, like what a way to mix, what a way to mix purpose with my career. And it's something I'm still doing to this day. You know, I'm still speaking on behalf of animals. I'm trying to grow my advocacy more on a personal level, not just working behind the scenes, but actually in the forefront. And y'all, I don't know what y'all are going to do with the story, but I do hope you feel inspired by it, that truly when you have a heart's desire and you work your way towards it, like it'll all work out. Like God just has a way of just making things work out. And so as much as 2020 was a COVID year, it was a year of just complete disturbance. It was in the midst of that disturbance was my fulfillment. And I am extremely grateful, and I do not take it for granted that I am in a space where I am literally living my 100% dream from the time I was 5 years old. I have my family, I play with numbers, and I speak for the trees. I speak for wildlife. I speak for the planet, and I speak for people that may feel vulnerable. So, yeah. And that's a wrap on this episode of Zoe's Corner. I hope you got a little dose of inspiration, a fresh perspective, or maybe even a good laugh along the way. If you loved this episode, don't forget to subscribe, share it with a friend, and leave a review. It means the world to me. And hey, let's keep this conversation going. Connect with me on Instagram at zoes.corner or at missconnie25 and let me know your thoughts. Until next time, step out of your corner and into the world. Go out, shine bright, and let Jesus be seen in all that you do. Catch you on the next one. Bye.